By the way, I know we were geeking out about Jack White, or as Kevin called him, Jack Whack.
Oh, you're so funny.
But while we're talking about great guests, how about the amazing Clark Gregg back on the Kevin Bean Show tomorrow? Adrian Colson himself is going to be here. Cascade Kevin is going to be on the program tomorrow, one of the most popular DJs in the world. And Adam Carolla. That's all tomorrow right here on K-Rock. A couple of weeks ago, Ralph Garman brought us a story in the Showbiz Beat that I was very interested in. Alec Baldwin got in more trouble with the police, ended up being arrested, in fact, this time. And as Lisa has pointed out many times, he brings a lot of this on himself. He really does have some anger issues.
Yeah.
But I thought it was kind of BS that the police were piling on lame ticket after lame ticket. I know they don't like him because he's been very outspoken against the police in New York. But first of all, they gave him a ticket for riding his bicycle the wrong way down a street in New York. Okay?
Now, if you've ever been to New York, that's all of New York. That happens.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So they gave him a ticket for that. And then when the police officer came up to him and said, hey, we want to give you a ticket for riding your bike down the wrong way down the street, which is already lame-o, they said, let's see your ID. And he said, I don't have any ID on me, which he didn't. Didn't have any driver's license or anything with him. And they gave him a ticket for that.
Well, how are they supposed to know who Alec Baldwin is?
That is so stupid. Like, seriously, for him, everyone knows who he is.
I mean, I guess we can't expect our police force to recognize everybody.
No, but don't you get the feeling like he's made comments about them? You sort of get the feeling like if I was a New York cop and he's making all those comments, maybe I hassle him some.
I would think so, too. I would think so, too.
But it's a – both of those are pretty weak tickets.
I think they're weak tickets, and that's the topic that we wanted to talk about. And I don't know that we've ever discussed this on the show before. Look, there are a lot of things that you can get in trouble for, a lot of things that you can get ticketed for. There are people, by the way, who think it's a weak ticket if you're only going – 11 miles over the speed limit. They think that's a weak ticket. You know, people have a different tolerance for what they think they should be arrested for.
Bean got a jaywalking ticket. That happened.
I did get a jaywalking ticket. That's right.
And jaywalking, that's pretty weak. I mean,
it
I know you shouldn't, and
it
I know it's dangerous.
Where you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a dangerous place to be doing it, you're putting everybody at risk. But I got one, too. And
you
it
got
was
a jaywalking ticket?
Not a busy street at all.
Well, we want to take some calls from you, the Kevin and Bean listener, on weak-ass tickets that you've gotten. Maybe even things that you didn't even know were illegal until you got a ticket for it. But a ticket that you think was weak, we want to hear what it was at 1-800-520-1067. Let's talk about jaywalking for 1 second, because I think that is something that just rubs everybody the wrong way because everybody has jaywalked. So what's the answer to that problem, Kevin? Is it you just don't give any jaywalk tickets and just accept that now we live in a world where anybody can cross the street at any time?
It's mayhem. No, I think common sense comes into play. Is it a risky neighbor? Not neighborhood, but
intersection.
Is it busy?
Intersection.
Yeah.
Is it busy and are you causing danger to yourself or other people? Maybe you should get one. But if you're on a residential street or you're anywhere in New York,
yeah.
I mean, people just walk across the streets. That's just how it works.
Yeah.
That seems like it's kind of weak.
So if you're the police and you see somebody who is with traffic going at full speed, he's racing between the cars
right,
to get across
dangerous.
The street. That's the guy you say is likely to get hit.
Yeah, I'd say that's a
but
valid
don't
ticket.
Give it to somebody who's in a suburban neighborhood and there's no cars around and he's just crossing in the middle of the street or whatever.
It was funny because yesterday I went jogging and I knew we were doing this topic today and it didn't occur to me there was a police car that was waiting right on a corner to see if people were running the stop sign because there was a school area and I jogged right behind the car and then I turned and went right across the street with no crosswalk and he did nothing about it because it wasn't dangerous.
Right.
And I would have considered that even though I'm an idiot because I did it. I almost hit his car. that's a weak ticket.
All right. We want to hear about your weak tickets at 1-800-520-1067. I saw a report from a guy online yesterday who said that he bought a new car that came with a license plate cover, came with one of those, he said, not tinted or anything like that, clear plastic protective case,
right.
With the dealership's name on the top and everything like that. That's what the car came with. He got pulled over and got a ticket from a police officer who said that it was an illegal cover for his license plate.
Why? People can't see it?
I think that's what the police officer said. And the guy who was writing the article said, I said, what, are you blind? It's clear plastic. Of course you can see it.
By the way, that's how you want to start talking to a cop if he pulls you over or something.
And then, Lisa, you suggested that maybe it was what?
Christine suggested it, that It may be of such a material that those cameras can't actually get a picture of the license plate.
I need to get one of those.
And that could be what it is. But again, that's a weak-ass ticket. All right, let's take one before the break here at 1-800-520-1067. That's the wrong button. Let's try Jimmy. He's on line 7. This is exactly what we're talking about. Jimmy's joining us now from West Hills. Hi, Jimmy. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. Thanks for listening, sir.
Hey, Kevin and Bean. Lisa May.
Hello.
You got a ticket for what?
I got a ticket for improper use of my horn.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Were you just laying it on?
No, it was.
Were you laying on it?
Or that?
LA County Sheriff and I, guy in front of me, light turned green, guy wasn't going. I honked my horn and the lights went on behind me and I thought they were pulling over the guy in front of me. Lo and behold, the cop pulled me over for improper use of my horn.
How is it an improper use of your horn? That's what the horn is made for.
That's what I thought.
You just tapped it, right? You just like, hey, the light's green. Pay attention.
Just pop, just a little pat, pat.
No kidding.
Did you argue with the policeman?
I argued with the policeman, and he threatened to write me up for more violations, including tinted windows. So I kind of got a better attitude and just took the ticket.
Wow. So what did he say to you? Of course, you literally have no idea. I know we all say, no, officer, I don't know why you're pulling me over, but you really didn't have any idea why you pulled me over. What did he say to you?
He said, do you know why I pulled you over? I said, I don't have a clue. He said that was improper use of your horn. And I was floored, and I asked him to explain it to me.
Yeah, was it?
He said that you are not allowed to honk your horn unless it's an emergency situation.
So you're supposed to sit?
And that was not an emergency situation.
What? Just sit at the light.
I'm at the light.
And so you're just supposed to sit there and let it go red?
No, the car did go. The light turned green. The car wasn't going. The person must have been texting or something. Hmm. Light turned green. See? I waited 3 or 4 seconds, honked my horn, then I got pulled over.
If that's the law that you can't honk your horn unless it's a dangerous situation, an emergency, then we all deserve tickets.
How much was the ticket? Do you remember, Jimmy?
I believe it was less than $200. I think it was $178.
You think that cop went back to the station and said, I gave a guy a ticket for improper use of horn? He was floored.
Maybe that's what it was, is the police all challenged each other to see who could find the most obscure law on the books to write a ticket for. All right, thank you so much for the call. We enjoyed talking to you. 1-800-520-1067. The weak-ass ticket you got. Doesn't have to be a motor vehicle ticket either, by the way. It could be for anything. Give us a call. We'll talk to you next on camera. Apparently, there are a lot of weak-ass tickets, as the hashtag has developed on Twitter, by the way, hashtag weak-ass ticket, on this topic that we're talking about here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Jeremiah writes in, I got a ticket for going 1 mile over the speed limit.
Okay. But there's more to that story, right?
Cop pulled me over, asked if I knew how fast I was going. I said 45, and he scoffed and said 46. Showed me the radar and gave me a speeding ticket, $276, says Jeremiah.
I would like to hear from a police officer on that one.
And one more before we go back to the phones. Mark writes in on the topic that we were just discussing about only being supposed to use your horn in an emergency situation.
Right.
According to the California DMV handbook, says Mark, it says that if someone is going the wrong way down a one-way street, you should not honk your horn at them because you might make them even more flustered.
What?
What?
So apparently we've all been using the horns wrong, I guess is what's going on.
That's absurd.
Right, let's go to Molly. She's on line 5, Redondo Beach. Was very kind to call and hold on. Molly gets us started in this segment on the Kevin and Bean Show. Weak-ass ticket. What happened?
Good morning, Lisa May.
Good morning.
Hi. So I had just left my office, and I was eating a burrito, and I got pulled over for eating my burrito because he was insisting that it was my cell phone.
First of all, is that euphemism? Eating your burrito.
It was meaty.
Molly, everybody. So the cop thought you were on your cell phone, so pulled you over. But then when it was clear that you were just eating a burrito, you still got a ticket?
Yeah, I showed him. He said, well, do you know I pulled you over? I said, no. He said, well, you were using your cell phone. I said, what? No, I was eating a burrito. This one right here. I mean, I still had it in my hand.
Now? Have it in your head now? It's weird.
I imagine that they can ticket you for eating in your car. Anyway, so he probably just switched it to that.
No, I don't know. That's not fair.
Not fair at all. By the way, when they start handing out tickets to everybody who eats in their car, just mail it to every driver in California, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, It was a California burrito.
Thanks.
See,
there you go.
We appreciate it very much. Speaking of eating, let's go to Pete. He's on line 7. He got an eating ticket, you guys, and he wasn't driving. Let's find out what happened.
Hey, Pete.
All right, guys. I'm still pissed, and it's been 25 years.
25 years ago.
I was on a bus, an MTA bus, mm-hmm. RTD, the old name.
Right.
And I was eating an ice cream, and an undercover cop busted me.
For what?
Actually.
For eating ice cream on a bus?
Eating ice cream on a bus.
Is that illegal?
It's completely illegal. They were there supposedly to catch taggers. Nope, not me. I get off the bus. Cop jumps off of the bus. And then the two guys, other undercover guys, came in their car, pulled up, and not arrested me, thank God, but gave me a ticket, and I had to serve community service 40 hours.
40 hours?
40 hours doesn't sound like much to people who haven't done community service, but that's a lot.
Oh, my God.
For those of us who have.
That's insane.
Wow. I don't blame you for still thinking about that 25 years later. That's incredible.
Were you smoking weed at the same time or kicking people? Or
I'm about the most vanilla guy you can get. I was in a school uniform. And they still busted me.
Oh, my God.
How about that?
And when the guy found out that I was there, the community service guy, he laughed at me and just signed it off.
Thank you, Pete. Appreciate the call so much. Carla writes in on the Kevin Bean Facebook page, my 10-year-old son got a ticket for riding his bicycle on the sidewalk in our neighborhood. There are no bike lanes there.
What? That's what the sidewalks are for?
That's what I would think. Nancy writes in, dear Kevin and Bean, again, Facebook page. I got a ticket for impeding the flow of traffic. I had stopped traffic while parallel parking my car. I got in on the first shot, and they still gave me the ticket. You have to stop the cars behind you when you back into a spot, though.
Yes. So that means you're just not allowed to parallel park.
apparently that's what it is. All right, this is crazy. 1-800-520-1067. Why don't we try Antonio? He's in Pasadena. He's up on line 1, please.
Hey, Antonio.
Hey, Kevin, how's it going? Nice to meet
you. Hi.
What'd you get a ticket for that was weak?
So I got a ticket for what the cop called, these are his words, high decibel of a car.
Your car made too much noise.
Correct. And it was, like I said, it was a car. It wasn't a motorcycle because, you know, some motorcycles are actually pretty loud. It
right.
It was my car.
But did you have it, like,
was it modified
tricked
or
out or anything?
No, it wasn't really modified. It was kind of, you know, a little bucket. It was one of those cars that, you know, was an older car, so it made a little bit more noise. But
so it was just basically, you know, a regular tailpipe making too much noise.
Yeah, I was just cruising down the street just with my buddy or driving down, just picked up some food from a restaurant he worked at.
I'm not sure any of that detail is necessary.
Well, wait, what kind of restaurant was it? Was it Cuban food or what? Do you remember?
It was Italian food, man.
Oh, that sounds good. Go on.
That's a weak ticket. All right, thank you for the call.
Super weak. All right, let's get away from driving for a minute and go to Michael. He's in Costa Mesa. He's on line 3. Michael, we're talking about weak ass tickets on the Kevin and Bean show today. It sounds like you got one.
Mine's really good. Right. I was smoking a cigarette on the 5 freeway, and I ashed it out the window, and I got a ticket for littering, and it was $1,000.
What?
Wow. So you didn't throw a cigarette out the window. You just ashed it.
Just ashed it.
How's it $1,000?
How is it a ticket? How is that a ticket?
How is that a ticket?
It's considered littering.
Michael, tell the truth. You were going to throw the cigarettes out the window when you were done, though, right?
No, I got a little ashtray here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you could have used the ashtray had you had the ashtray.
Yeah.
But, now,
it made me laugh, but yeah, it was pretty painful.
Let me ask you guys this. I mean, you shouldn't throw cigarettes out the window. Obviously, A, it's litter, and B, you worry about it starting a fire. But is that also the thinking behind ashing, too? Is it somehow is that what's going on because of the drought in California? Somehow even an ash could start a fire? Is that why they make that law?
I guess so.
I don't know. $1,000 seems a little steep.
Wow. I am surprised, that's for sure. Thanks so much for the call. Appreciate that so much. Wow. Let's go to Andy. He's up next. He's on line 8, Mission Viejo. Andy, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
What's up, fellas?
Hi there. You got a weak ticket. What was it?
When I was 15 years old, I received a seatbelt violation after being ejected from a car after an accident.
All right. You weren't wearing a seatbelt, but you had gone flying out of the car after an accident.
Exactly, and was in the emergency room because I was very jacked up, and the CHP officer came to the hospital and placed the ticket on my chest in the ER hospital bed.
For not wearing a seatbelt. Doesn't he think maybe you learned your lesson by getting ejected out of a car?
You would think so.
What the hell?
The worst part is it was out in, like, Joshua Tree in the middle of nowhere, so I had to drive all the way the hell back out there just to go to court.
Wow. All right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate that. Let's go to Dee. She's on line 7. She's from Yucaipa. Hi, Dee.
Hi. You can call it Ucrapa if you want.
All right. Ucrapa.
Hey, I got a ticket for reckless endangerment of a child for walking my little sister across railroad tracks that were no longer in use.
What? That doesn't even make sense.
What's the danger? What's the danger there?
That's what I wanted to know. And I was 16 and she was 6. And I was like, seriously? They're not even being used.
They weren't being used at the time, or they were out of use?
Ever.
Out of use.
Then you got to fight. How long did this happen?
Oh, we'll see. Then I have to tell you that I'm 53 years old.
No. Okay. Oh. All right. So did you fight it then, I guess,
was
is my
16.
Question.
How is she going to fight a ticket?
I did have to show up in court, and it was like, of course, I always looked older than I was. So they're like, oh, 16. Oh, okay. No. So they set me up for community service. And I was like, really? They ended up not giving me anything because they were more embarrassed than anything.
Yeah.
Because I was taking pictures of, like, no signs up and concrete barriers.
That is weak ass. That is absolutely weak ass. All right, Dee, thanks for the story. Let's do one more. Let's close with Julia. I want to make sure I understand what it is that she's going to tell us here, because it sounds like to me she may have deserved this ticket. Julia, Anaheim, you're on. Go ahead.
I totally deserve the ticket. I'm not saying I didn't. However, it was still weak ass.
All right.
I'm running through Mission Viejo, which was a mistake to begin with, because I'm always underdressed when I go through there.
Okay.
And I have my handicap placard up in the window, you know, and I left it up. So, of course, I needed to be punished with $40.
Wait, what does that mean, you left it up?
Like, you know the blue handicap placard?
Yeah.
It goes up around your rearview mirror with a little hook on it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I left it up while I was driving.
Oh, you're not supposed to do that. That's just for when you park?
Right.
I didn't know that. How about that? That is a weak-ass ticket.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Did the guy explain to you?
Yes, but he was very, can I say, douchey?
Yeah,
sure. I mean, you already did, but
how dare you be handicapped and drive with a handicap placard on your car? How dare you?
It's getting more like communism, saying we're going to do this and do that.
Well, 6.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to the Kevin DeBean Show at 7:36. Congratulations to David Curran from Newhall. Just got tickets to see the Black Keys.
Oh,
what?
So lucky.
They are so great in concert. You'll love it.
More chances for you to win Black Keys tickets coming up here on K-Rock. Actor Clark Gregg joins us next hour. Let's talk about fan fiction. Ralph brought it up on the show yesterday. There's a fan fiction been around for a long time, by the way. This is where you're a fan of like Star Trek, for instance, and you write stories about romance between members of the Starship Enterprise. I mean, it's been going on for decades and decades and decades, but it's kind of turned into big business a little bit after that lady who is now so famous for the 50 Shades of Grey. You know, that started out as Twilight fan fiction, just started out her writing her own stories about Twilight fan fiction. Yeah.
So she takes the characters that are in it and the storylines or whatever, and then she writes her own creative storyline involving them.
That's right. Yeah.
That's weird.
And, you know, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of sites like this and places on the internet where people do this. And some of it becomes quite popular and has quite a following. And the reason Ralph brought it up is because there's this lady who has been writing fan fiction about One Direction romance stories involving Harry Styles. And it has become so popular online that she has actually gotten herself a book deal with Simon & Schuster. So now they're going to be publishing that. And that's going to be a real thing that people can buy.
So she was writing it just kind of for herself, making stuff up about Harry Styles, and they're going to, and now she has a book deal.
Now she has a book deal.
What
exactly.
The hell?
So it's a big thing. It's a thriving industry out there. Apparently,
do you read fan fiction, B?
No, I'm not. I'm not interested. Look, real life is fascinating enough for me without making stuff up.
Well, I mean,
I love reading, but I don't read fan fiction. I like the original book.
Bean's being modest. He's done some writing.
Bean has?
Yeah, I mean, he's done some fan.
What are you talking about?
He's done some fan fiction.
Bean?
Yes.
Really? Well,
we got Ralph tracked down an audiobook, which I thought was awesome.
Wait a minute. Hold on a sec.
Fan of something.
This is Bean, who's obsessed with, and in contrast to the rest of us, who hate Tadolf Swindler.
Taylor Swift?
Bean is, quote, obsessed with Taylor Swift.
I do love her so much. That actually is true.
But what do you think it is that I wrote?
Bean said, what do you mean, what do I think? I have it. Just give me a second. Yeah. Bean said, did you guys see my new Twitter avatar? And we said, no, Bean, what's your new Twitter avatar? And he goes, Meredith. And we go, is that name supposed to mean something to us? Well, that Meredith is Taylor Swift's cat.
Oh,
everybody,
my God.
And everybody knows that, Kevin.
And Taylor Swift's cat is really popular, he said. What the hell?
Taylor Swift's cat is really popular.
Weirder and creepier every day.
All Taylor Swift fans know about Meredith. She's a huge Instagram star. Come on.
Well, I have Bean's fan fiction. If you want to hear Bean's fan fiction.
I do, too.
About Taylor Swindler and her cat, Meredith.
All right.
Let's give it a listen.
Hey. I'm just an average 18-year-old pig farmer in Washington State. Nothing unusual ever happens to me. At least I thought until the day a stray cat walked into my yard. I thought that cat looked familiar until I read its tag. And it said Meredith. I could tell right away there was an attraction between me and the cat. So I opened a can of tuna fish and rubbed the contents all over my Meredith and I were enjoying sweet, sexy time in the barn when suddenly I heard the door creak open. Looking up, I saw a pale young girl with long flowing blonde hair and bright red lipstick. I knew at that moment it had to be my sweet tea swizzle. What the f*** are you doing, you pervert? She asked. To which I responded, don't knock it till you've tried it, sister. I invited her to join our sexy time. She thought for a moment and said, you're pretty fly. It wasn't long until we decided to get jiggy with it. T-Swizzle said I was the bomb and that she would write a song about me. I could tell the three of us were sharing true love. It was until Taylor found out I was hiding food from her. Sadly, she turned me into the authorities. And now my only contact with her is the occasional strongly worded letter I receive from her here in the Washington State Correctional Facility, where I'm doing 10 years for bestiality. I guess we're never, ever, ever getting back together.
Fire!
No, I won't take that back.
Oh, my God.
So, I didn't write that, but I was sure by it.
That's out there.
I just think you're terrific.
I think we made the right decision to not tease ahead that we're going to be talking to the Armenian comedian because that gives people the opportunity to switch stations. So
switch stations to us, you mean?
We just, we just right out of nowhere, Sam is on the air. Hey, I didn't know you were on Twitter as Born High Armenian Comedian, B-O-R-N-H-Y-E. How long you been on Twitter?
Oh, as soon as the movie was released, it was on the Twitter and YouTube, and Facebook, everywhere.
Is that you tweeting, or is somebody else tweeting from the account?
Oh, no, my producers.
You're pretty shoot.
Do you tweet anywhere?
No, I have all the, you know, my friends, they all try to chip in and help me, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, the reason the Armenian comedian, lifelong friend of the Kevin and Bean Show, is joining
friend
us today
is strong
because something that he's been warning us about for months is finally happening tonight. It's the opening of Club Astral, which is in Burbank. Now, what's your participation in Club Astral opening up? You don't own the place? Do you work there? What's going on with you, Sam?
No. Well, the Club Astral is the website for the for my show, but the event is going to be in Bouvardia Restaurant Nightclub in Burbank on Glen Oaks by Olive. So I would like to give a ticket.
Wait, hold on. So you're doing, what are you doing, stand-up, or is your band playing?
Both.
Yes. Wow, that's a double dose of Sam.
Wow, okay.
I have about 10 songs rolling. I'm going to sing all of them. It's all messages, what's going on with me and the world.
Sure.
I took a train in New York City, Highway 118, World War III, Prosperity Lady.
These are the names of some of your new songs, Sam?
Yes. Take Me Home and Teenagers and Highway 118.
Already
and,
said that.
Oh, Mama, Oh, Papa.
Ooh, and classic.
All that.
Yeah.
Oh, he still does the old hits. That's great. Yes. So it's tonight at what time, Sam, can people see you?
9 o'clock. Be there by 7 because, ticket sales are really booming.
Are so they really booming?
I'm going to give also a giveaway to the listeners, some passwords that they are my biggest fans, and I have about 20 pair of, people to come in.
Well said.
I don't understand a word of what you just said.
So, SoCalMusicNews.com, is that where you go to get tickets and information about the club today?
Right.
SoCalMusicNews.com. I know it's very difficult to understand anything that Sam says.
Club Astra.
Right. Okay. Club Astra. So it is a restaurant, though?
Yes.
So people are going to sit down. They're going to order food.
Yeah.
And then you
drink.
Drinks. And then you're going to be on stage.
Yeah. And then when they eat and drink, we have a flair dancer. She's going to perform. And I have a flair bartender in the back. And food and drink, and then magic tricks by me and MC by me.
I didn't realize magic tricks were part of it.
So you're MCing, you're doing magic tricks, you're telling jokes, and you're singing?
Yeah.
Triple threat.
This is a quadruple threat. This is so much Armenian comedian, Kevin. How can you not go to this tonight?
Are you dressing like Mr. Clown?
No.
For the magic? What do you mean, no? Don't say it like that. With disrespect.
Disgusting.
No.
No. I'm wearing my costume. That's it.
What's your costume?
And everybody is really jumping on the board for, also I'm going to have a comedy night.
Okay.
All the promoters are jumping in from the website. All kinds of talents are coming in and all kinds of... still in the process of every week, every Monday, every Tuesday, we're going to keep busy doing this for a whole year. And then I have an album release in June, and this is, we're giving a CD tonight, giving away my songs. So come on down, have fun, people.
Okay. What's the album release for if you're giving them away?
And then... if you can do some kind of on the door, they have to do password KROQ.
Right, sure.
All right. Like that.
Right. We got to be done with this by now. All right. SoCalMusicNews.com is where you go to get all the information for Club Astral tonight in Burbank with our friend, the Armenian comedian, who, as you've heard, can do it all.
Buvardia.
Please.
Buvardia.
What?
Whatever you just said, right.
Buvardia is a nightclub, the place.
Well, what? It says Club Astral, though. Isn't it Club Astral? Yeah.
No. Club Astral is a website. Buvardia is a nightclub. Buvardia.
And Club Astral.
To do breakfast over there with you guys.
Right, we're going to do that Saturday.
Okay. All right, Sam. Well, none of the paperwork that you've said has anything to do with anything you're telling us on the radio. But people will find you, I guess, if they go to SoCalMusicNews.com. So have fun tonight. I hope some of our listeners come down and give us some reviews.
And then I want Kevin or anybody should be there to see me. Come on.
Right.
Lightning is going to come. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Is gonna come.
All right. Hey, Sam.
Lisa is coming.
Nope.
Sam?
Yes?
We have to run, but leave us with a joke, please.
Okay. One day I was on the roof working, and then one of my friends came by and he says, hey, Sam, can I borrow some money? And I came down and I told him, would you like to come up the roof? I want to tell you something. And then I made my friend come up the roof, and I turned around and I said, no.
I'm assuming that was the punchline, right?
Yeah.
All right, Sam. Thanks for
taking
calling.
Take us out with another joke.
No, that's we're done, Kevin. We're out of time. We're done.
What?
We were just talking about these fourth row seats for the K-Rock Weenie Roast, and Sonny Salas from Whittier won some. Just like that. Boom. Picked up the phone. Now he's going.
All right.
From Saturday. Your chance to win coming up. Hey, superhero Dave Sanchez, the King of Mexico, joins us in studio. Hey, Dave.
What's up?
So, you saved a life?
I think I did.
Now, you guys tell me.
Oh, right there.
We'll
shaky.
Tell you. You didn't.
Well, we are taking your calls. If you have ever saved a life, we want to know what these circumstances were and what that's like and if that person owes you and if you still get paid from it. And we want to know all the details about how you, if it weren't for you springing into action, somebody else would be dead. You can call us at 1-800-520-1067. What's your story, Dave?
Well, of course, since it's me, it's the least minimal action I could do. So,
right.
You know, and if you want the complete details, here it is. You know, it's late at night on Pico Boulevard. Mm-hmm. It's dark. It's a cold night, like, you know, every cold night is.
I'm not positive we need that much detail.
Oh, okay. No.
The temperature, I don't know.
It was
59-ish?
No. So I'm pulling up to this red light, and the light's just turning red, and I'm slowing down. I stop, and I just happen to look in my rearview mirror, and I see this big, like, moving truck just barreling down the road, and I'm like, he's not going to stop.
Barreling down the road the opposite direction?
No, coming
your
from
direction.
Behind me. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I see a couple, you know, on the corner. The light turns red. They're about to walk. They're about to step off the sidewalk.
Right.
I honk my horn. They step back on the sidewalk, and the moving truck just blows through the red light.
Just right through the red.
Wow.
Right through the red light. And a car was following behind them, and we're both looking at each other like freaked out because we both knew that. That was bad news coming.
Oh, my gosh.
So this truck didn't even slow down, just blew
not
right through the red light
it,
in the lane next to you.
Yeah, it looked like the driver was just not paying attention, you know.
Dude.
And then, like the light was green for the longest time, and then, you know, turned yellow, and I was slowing down, and then I just happened to see the truck, and
here's why boom. I don't buy this story.
What?
Because you're cynical what? And see the negative in everything.
I'm not saying I did the most. All I did was honk my little stupid horn and went, meet me. And no. The people heard it and you know, backed
up. I'm cynical of celebrities because it seems like celebrities have PR people.
Oh, and I'm then, a celebrity. Thank you, Kevin.
Hold on.
Oh.
And then, you know, that kind of story gets into, so-and-so swooped into action and pushed him out of the road at his own danger. And you
right.
just go, no, you know what? Take it easy. Dave honked his horn. Doesn't mean they wouldn't have seen the car coming.
They wouldn't have. I'll tell you what.
Possible.
Possible.
And they would have been roadkill. Time to get back out.
But most of the celebrity stories that you see, maybe they saved a life. Maybe they didn't. But the spin, because positive, you know, coverage is very important for celebrities. So sometimes I think sometimes they do. And sometimes
in Dave's situation, though, we don't have an alternate universe that we can see what would have happened if Dave had done nothing.
I think it sounds like credit for that one.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's very likely that those people would have been in the crosswalk and been hit by the truck.
But let me ask you this, Bean: who less than Dave is aware of the surroundings outside of his car?
Like I said, I was lucky enough to look back in my rear mirror. I normally don't. This one time I did.
I feel like the military could come up behind Dave, invading, and he wouldn't see him.
Godzilla could be out there, and he wouldn't notice.
All right, I'll take your word for it. All right.
All right.
That's pretty strong.
Yeah.
What do I get?
Did you have any kind of exchange with these people at all? Did you roll down your window and talk to them at all, or just drive on?
We just went, oh, my God, and they gave him the nod, and I took off his green light.
You gave him the nod, dude. Like, hey, thanks for saving my life, nod?
Yeah, like, yeah. They're like, oh, thank you. It was late, man. I had to go. I'm going to sleep.
Sure. It's good time.
Dave, you should feel good about that. That's awesome.
Thank you. I do. Everyone send me a dollar.
We had a story last week, and we're going to get to your call, James. Don't hang up in 1 second. Taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. If you saved a life, we want to hear about it. We had a story last week about, and this happens all the time in New York just because the subway platforms are so crowded, there are so many people on them that people fall.
Right.
It happens, you know, it seems like a few times a year we see a story like this. Well, there was an unconscious teenage girl on the subway tracks last week.
Oh, my God.
Most of the people who saw her did what? Stood on the platform and took cell phone pictures of the train approaching.
That's brilliant.
Really?
One guy, Josh Garcia, jumped onto the tracks and picked her up and got her off of the tracks before the train came through. But it's been a scandal in New York with all the newspapers just like, who are you a-holes that stood there taking a picture?
And they were yelling, smile!
But, I mean, look, not to take anything away from your situation, Dave, because, look, you probably saved those people's lives if they'd have been hit by that truck. This guy jumped onto a train track in a subway while a train was coming and pulled somebody off the tracks. That guy is a hero, right?
You should send that guy a dollar.
We should.
And the bad Samaritan standing around taking photos. What's that deal? All right, let's talk to James real quick, and then we'll take a quick break and come back with all your calls. Hi, James. Thanks for listening to the Kevin Bean Show. You're out in Torrance. What happened?
Morning, guys. Morning, listening.
Good morning.
What happened?
So this is a couple years ago, and I'm in a rehab facility, and I'm having breakfast with a really good friend that I had made there. And all of a sudden, we're having a normal conversation, and his face just hits his plate. He just passes out. So I get behind him, and I've got my hand on his pulse, and his heart starts doing this really funny stuff. And all of a sudden, he goes into complete cardiac arrest. So I drag him on the floor.
Are you an EMT?
No, I'm first aid, and I'm CPR certified.
So he's having a heart attack. He's not choking on food.
No, it was pretty obvious that he wasn't choking on food. Usually people choking on food, they struggle. He wasn't struggling. He just went limp.
Just went limp.
And, he was doing that death gargle thing. And, yeah, he wasn't choking.
Oh,
so
my God.
I drag him on the floor, and I give him two rescue breaths. And I start performing CPR. And at the time that this happened, the count was 15-2. And I'm doing 15-2. And it's, like I said, it's in a rehab facility, so there's cameras everywhere. And it took almost 11 minutes for paramedics to get there.
Oh, my God.
There was construction on the street. And if you ever try to take a pencil and balance it in the palm of your hand and try and keep it vertical, that's kind of what it was like. It was really difficult because I would get a pulse back, and then I wouldn't. And you don't want to give somebody chest compressions when they've got a pulse because you could actually stop their heart. So it was really a difficult situation and difficult to do. But the guy ended up pulling through. And to make matters worse, like I said, it was all being filmed. To make matters worse, everybody in this guy's family is in the medical industry. His mom's a nurse, his sister's a nurse, and they come and they watch the video of me doing CPR on their son, brother. And I'm being, you know, not ridiculed, but I'm being judged by these people, and they don't even know if their son's going to make it. That he was in an induced hypothermic coma.
You're being judged by them for what?
How I was doing CPR, because whether or not I did it correctly.
Hey, a-holes, he's alive.
You're the only one who's doing anything.
But they didn't know that yet.
James, let me ask you this, because we're pretty short on time, but weren't there doctors at this rehab facility? Wasn't there somebody there to assist you, or was it just you and this guy who fell?
No, there was us, other residents, and a couple therapists and some counselors.
Wow. So did he end up being okay? Did he have any brain damage or anything?
Nothing. Wow. Absolutely fine.
That's a dude that says.
I will say this. We used to play cards all the time, and he used to always beat me ever since this happened. He has a harder time beating me now.
Yeah, he has to let you in now. He owes you his life.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, the guy never called me.
I hope the facility did the right thing and said, James, you don't have to be in rehab anymore. Get back out there. You've done enough.
Hey, on a side note, everything's fine. I'm completely 100% sober.
And fantastic.
Good for you, man.
I listen to you guys all the time. You guys are great. Thanks for
No, you're actually great. Thank you so much for the call.
You're great.
That's an amazing story, isn't it?
Yeah.
And by the way, how lucky for this other dude that he was there and knew so much about CPR. Like, I didn't know that thing about you stop compressing when they get a pulse. I mean, I didn't know that. This guy knew what to do. That's amazing.
That was sweet.
All right, Bill, Thomas, Dave, everybody, please hang on. You saved a life. It's your chance to brag about it. We'll take your calls next on K-Rock. We're taking your calls on how you saved a life. If you're ever lucky enough to be in that position and you do the right thing and somebody's alive because of it, I imagine that's the type of thing you don't easily forget. 1-800-520-1067. Let's talk to, how about Phil real quick? Phil's in Costa Mesa. He's out on the road one day. And what happens, Phil?
Was going whitewater rafting, saw a truck go over the edge of a mountain.
Saw a truck go over the edge of a mountain?
It was carrying watermelons. It almost creamed us. But it rolled a couple of times and came to rest against some trees. Had to climb down to it. Could see the fuel tank had ruptured. And all I was thinking about, and the engine was still running. All I could think about was, please, if you're going to burn and blow up, do it before I get there.
Yeah. No kidding.
I'm going to do my best to save him, but please don't let me die in the process.
That alone, by the way, Phil, would keep most people away, is realizing that thing is likely to blow up at some point. That's what would make people not want to run in and try to pull the driver out.
I felt I just had to. I could not let the guy just burn.
See, that's a true you saved a life story.
Yeah.
Yep. Pete, I'll tell you why I'm sometimes cynical is because remember our former producer Lightning? Of course.
There's an old couple that had flipped their car. And he's like, he pulled over. He's like, I was going to go to a rock and roll show, but there's no rocking and rolling for me tonight. I'm just going to stick here with you. And he didn't really, like, do anything to save their lives. He was just helping, you know, relieve their fear.
Keeping them company until help came.
Yeah, exactly.
Did we lose Phil, by the way? Did he hang up?
I believe so, yes.
He had to go save his life.
I'm wondering if the guy was unconscious or something, if you have to drag him out. Like, what happened? And did the truck ever blow up? That's what I was wanting to know. All right. Thanks for the call, Phil. Let's move on to Thomas. He's up next from Yucaipa. Hi, Thomas. Thanks for calling the Kevin and Bean Show. What's going on?
Hey, guys. What's going on?
You saved a life.
Yeah, quite a few of them.
Quite a few of them? Well, it's Tuesday. I guess I saved another life today.
Yeah. So I was in Havasu with my stepbrother and my pop. We saw a boating accident. A drunk guy ran over a little boat in a big boat, and a lot of people got hit by the prop. So we pulled three ladies out and a little girl. My brother and I had to basically patch up some bad wounds. I had to stick my finger in the lady's neck to stop her from bleeding.
Oh my gosh. So wait, so they got overturned by this other boat that hit them, and they got cut up in the propeller. That's what you're saying. So they're all in the water bleeding when you pull them out?
No.
Okay.
It was a big Formula One boat, and the guy was drunk, and he ran over the little boat. So the prop went up and over the boat and just hit all the passengers.
Dude.
Whoa.
Yeah.
It was
pretty bad. There was an 8-year-old little girl in the boat that my stepdad was trying to help out, and he gave her 3 extra hours, and she ended up passing.
Oh, my God. Oh, man. That's a horrible thing. I mean, I'm glad you were there, I guess, to help the people that you were able to save, but don't you wish you hadn't been there? That's terrible.
It was a rough sight to see. You know, blood everywhere, a lot of limbs that were hurt. I had to tie off a lot of, like, steel patching.
Now, again, how do you know how to do all that?
You know, it's so funny, because at the time, it's like common sense. You know, you have to stop the bleeding, so you cover up the wounds, try and, you know, field dressing isn't the best thing to do, but at the time, you got to stop the bleeding somehow.
Yeah, right. So you're just winging it. You're just doing whatever makes sense at the time, I guess.
Exactly.
Wow. Were these girls hot at least?
I'm sorry, say that again?
I said thanks a lot for calling, Thomas. We appreciate it so much. Let's go to Iggy up next on line 5 from Upland. Hi, Iggy. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. You saved a life, too.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Our listeners are goddamn heroes,
that's
by
right.
the way.
Every one of them.
So anyway, I was living in New York for about 4 years in Queens, a little town called Howard Beach. It's basically a little beach town down near Rockaway in Queens. And Hurricane Sandy came in, and in a matter of minutes, our street basically filled up to the second floor, and the entire street became basically like a flowing river. So in our neighborhood, there's a lot of older people who weren't really able to get out as fast as the water came in.
Right.
So with the water coming in from the ocean and the rivers, I mean, it came in so fast, it was knocking down, like, front walls, doors, breaking everything, pushing cars, blowing out transformers.
So, Higgy, why were you still there? Why didn't you evacuate? You knew Sandy was coming.
Well, we actually decided to stay because we had a hurricane a year before that. And it wasn't even as bad as they made it out to be. So we actually ended up having a hurricane party. We got to the party. We had one drink, and then the water came in.
Dude. So whose life did you save?
Well, there were several different families that were stuck all on the same street that we lived on. And nobody can get in the water because either they were too young or they had a grandma with them.
Whose life did you save?
I don't even know these people. They were just neighbors of ours. I basically swam from house to house, grabbing person by person, and swimming them to higher ground.
Oh, wow.
How many people?
How many people?
I would say at least 8, about 3
Dude,
different families.
Make it 25. I mean, seriously, if you're going to tell the story.
We can't check.
Yeah. Right? We can't fact check your story.
We're just going to believe you, dude. That's awesome. Thank you, Iggy.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks.
So I guess the point is we should all, those of us who have never been in a position to save a life, we're worthless, right? We
should
just
all
feel bad about ourselves today, I guess?
Yeah. Okay, good work.
Ronda Rousey talks UFC 170 coming up later on today on the Kevin and Bean Show, plus, apparently something to do with depressed penguins. And I don't even think I want to know about that. I don't want my penguins to be sad.
No.
We'll take care of it. Don't worry.
Here's a story that centers around America's number one film right now, the Lego Movie. Anyone see that yet, the Lego Movie?
I have not.
No, I wanted to, but the times didn't work out. Looks good.
You should go see it. By all accounts, it is a fantastic movie and just hilarious. And apparently Will Arnett, doing the voice of Batman, just steals the movie. But it looks great. Well, the villain in this movie is a guy named Lord Business. He's, you know, we've seen this in lots and lots of different movies. He's the evil rich guy who's tried to screw over the poor people that we relate to and root for in the film, right?
Right, right.
And I don't think the point is that everybody who runs a business is automatically evil, but the character in the Lego Movie does happen to run a business and does happen to be evil. But that's not the way Fox News sees it. And they recently did a whole segment on how Hollywood is anti-business. And you're going to think that we made this up, but this is real tape right off the Fox News channel.
Hollywood pushing its anti-business message to our kids. First, it was the Muppets movie. Remember, they used an oil baron as the enemy. A year later, it was the Lorax casting environmentalists against anyone who dared to create a new business. And, well, now it's the Lego Movie with the villain named President Business. Take a listen to him.
Would you cancel my 2 o'clock? This next meeting could run a little bit deadly.
Hollywood has long been dominated by the far left, which is very anti-capitalist. And we've seen these movies over the decades. I think about It's a Wonderful Life, where Mr. Potter, the banker, is considered the villain in that movie. Do you think, I mean, for Hollywood, it's all about the bottom line. So they will hire a Republican star like Sylvester Stallone or Bruce Willis if they think that they can carry a movie and make money. What is the purpose of trying to indoctrinate kids in a movie? I mean, I guess they believe this movie is going to make a lot of money. So no matter what, they can embed these kinds of anti-capitalist messages and get away with it.
You're defending
Mr.
Potter?
Yeah.
Kidding.
Wait, hold on. That's real?
Wait, go ahead.
Yes, Lisa?
No, you go ahead.
Mr. Potter is the slumlord in It's a Wonderful Life, who's basically trying to crush everyone in town and make them live in their crappy the crappy houses that
so
he
built. So what
builds.
Fox News says is true.
Well, he is an evil villain, but again, just because you have a rich guy as an evil villain doesn't mean that you're saying that all rich people are evil. That's the disconnect here, I think, in this argument.
Here, by the way, that argument, not strong enough. So somebody wrote a letter to the editor of the Wall Street Journal, and in that he says, I would call attention to the parallels of fascist Nazi Germany to its war on its 1%, namely the Jews, to the progressive war on the American 1%, namely the rich.
It's exactly the same. Rounding up the Jews to put in ovens is the same as making fun of a rich person in a Lego movie.
That's true.
Well, we wanted to find out more about this. Maybe there is another side of the story that we're just not seeing. So we asked Dave if you could line somebody up. And I believe we have Charles Emerson Clark. He's on the phone. He is a spokesperson for an organization called the Rich Americans Against Persecution. Is that right, Mr. Clark?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I mean, you're probably a guy who makes $1 million a minute, so this is very valuable for you to give us a little bit of your time today.
Yes, I am losing money while I'm speaking with you. Mm. Hold on a second.
All right.
Oh, no, I just made some more. That's okay.
So what are we not hearing about this? Because we listened to that tape on Fox, and it sounds like a Saturday Night Live skit where they're parodying intelligent people and their thoughts.
Well, it's easy to dismiss, but in reality, that is absolutely true. Being a rich person in America is now like being a Jew in Germany in the 1930s.
That's dumb.
That is absolutely correct. Not that it's dumb, but that is right.
I see.
How is it
here,
like that?
Those of us here at RAP, R-A-A-P, the Rich Americans Against Persecution, mm-hmm. and please don't confuse it, it's the good RAP, not the other one.
What's wrong with you?
Is the fact that we're being persecuted, and if you don't pay attention now, sure, they may be coming for our Bentleys now, but next it'll be for your crappy Prius or whatever it is that you drive.
Okay.
So keep in mind that once all the rich people are rounded up, then only poor people will be left to
How are rich people being rounded up? Rich people are living in a country where they have the ability to make billions of dollars. How is that you being persecuted against?
Because everyone's picking on us.
Does it hurt your
yes,
feelings?
Yes, it does. And, you know, this climate we live in under this socialist dictator, right. President Barack Obama.
Right. Oh, the African?
Yes. Somali pirate, Barack Obama.
He's not a Somali pirate.
Oh, I'm the president now. He said that. He came to the White House with a gun. He said, I'm the president now.
That's not what happened.
It happened. I saw it.
That's not how it happened.
I saw Fox News did a special on it.
I see. Okay. All right. You're saying.
And now he's trying to make us all out. These billionaires, here's what we're going to do. We're going to bail them out so they don't have to suffer any losses. That's bad?
Well, people tend to... No, I mean, it's people's tax money that they're using to help.
And then he says that, and then people suddenly angry at us because they're unemployed, and we're still rich. Come on!
What does that mean, come on?
Stop
if you're
it.
Unemployed, that's... Stop it?
Yeah. And we're underrepresented in Congress. Did you know only over half of the people in Congress are millionaires? Only over half!
That sounds like a lot!
Only over half. What we need is 100% of Congress to be made up of millionaires.
But then no one will represent the little guy.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm missing your point. Yeah, so, right, yes, and, good, right, so, and, well, plus, yes, as well, también, y tú.
Right, so I'm saying maybe we need people to represent both sides. No?
Oh, you're cute.
Oh, I accidentally hung up the phone. I have to call back.
I have to call back.
Producer Dave, going to get Vijay Novak on the line for us here in a second. He, of course, is the actor from The Office, writer for The Office as well. He was also in Inglourious Basterds. He's on screen now in Saving Mr. Banks. He's also a very very popular stand-up comedian, and now he's written a book. What's with these guys who do all the things, by the way?
Overachieving. It's just, I mean, it's annoying.
It's annoying.
Yeah.
Pull back a little bit, BJ.
I'm just saying, we haven't figured out how to do one thing well. BJ is doing all things well. The book is out, available today, by the way. It is called One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories. So clearly, he's not quite done with the title. Hi, BJ. Welcome to the show, my friend. How are you?
Thank you so much. And I got to thank you, first of all. You guys mention my birthday every year. And I get more happy birthdays because of the Kevin and Bean show.
Oh, really?
Than I ever did from Facebook, which I'm not on anymore, so that's how my friends know. So thank you for every July 31st.
Let me read, no worries, let me read about your book, if you don't mind. BJ Novak's One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories, is endlessly entertaining, surprisingly sensitive, and startlingly original debut that signals the arrival of a brilliant new voice in fiction.
Wow.
You wrote your own review, didn't you, BJ?
My mom wrote that with me.
That is sweet.
It sounds like it. Writing a book, it seems the friends of ours that have written books like Corolla and guys like that, it seems way harder than they expect it's going to be going in. Was that the case for you, or because you've written for TV for so long, you kind of already knew how to sit down and generate a lot of words?
Yeah, for me it was, it started with just an obsession that you don't realize how much work you're doing because you're so into it.
Right.
I would write stage directions sometimes for The Office that I would take great pride in, like, you know, Pam falls on Jim's shoulder and he reacts as though a butterfly had landed on his arm. I'm like, what am I doing? This is so pretended. Like, no one, doesn't matter. Then what did Dwight say? Like, so I kind of always had that desire to kind of just write a little more, be more literate in what I was trying to do, but I didn't really get the chance. So when The Office ended and I had all these ideas that hadn't ever made it into Office episodes because they weren't, you know, they were too imaginative for something that would happen at a paper company.
Right.
I was just so excited. I couldn't stop writing. That's why there's so many stories in the book. And I wrote twice as many and cut them down just because I was so ready to do this.
Your hilarious promo video that you put out a couple weeks ago, black and white, in French, with you and some of your comedian friends, including Mindy.
Yeah.
I thought, is that part of the allure of being a writer to you? I mean, I know you made the video for comedy's sake, but is there some sort of attraction to writing to you that
100%.
You think, oh, it's so romantic and so cool, and I just want to be that guy?
Absolutely, 100%. I want to.
Are you wearing a scarf
author.
Now?
Yeah, I should be. Yeah, that was totally some of the fun for me, and I wanted to catch myself doing it too. Like, wait a second, you know, that's what the video is as well. It's sort of, it's meant to sort of cut that, I celebrate that idea and cut it down because it's really cool to have a book in a bookstore and do signings as an author. It's really.
Do you smoke
glamorous.
A pipe now?
I should.
You really should.
Do you have a little dog of an indeterminate breed?
Yeah. There's all these things I can do. I really wanted to make it entertaining. So that's why I always wanted to catch myself with those instincts and say, these, you know, if you were a fan of The Office, what's a story that is funny without being pretentious and is smart without taking himself too serious. Like, I wanted to do that kind of thing in this book and not the over-pretentious literary thing. I wanted to make something accessible. So I always had to catch myself with that instinct.
Now, this book is great, Kevin, for guys like you because there's, you know, 60 stories or something like that, and some of them are just one page. I mean, even you can knock that out in a weekend.
That's sweet. I'm not a big reader, BJ, but I certainly, this sounds like something I would love.
I'm telling you, that's how I read books. I always go to the shortest story first.
I
always do, and then I feel accomplished for reading it. So I wanted a book that was just pure
now. I've started, you know, 1,000 books. I've finished like 2. Am I going to finish yours?
I don't have
a very good track record with paying attention.
Well, it sounds like maybe you won't.
I think you leave it in the bathroom.
I hope you like it enough that you keep going. I mean, I tried to mix them up in a way that you always want to read the next one.
Here's the thing that I thought was fascinating. And this is the voice of actor, comedian, now writer, BJ Novak here on The Kevin and Bean Show. I read that one of the things that you did, BJ, and I've never heard of an author doing this before, is you read these stories kind of while they were in progress in front of a live audience to see what the reaction would be. And I just can't imagine anything worse for a writer than reading something out loud that's not finished. There must have been a lot of bombs, right?
Yeah, and that's why I did it, because I didn't want to publish the book and have everyone say, hey, that was great, but not really mean it. When you're live, you can't hide your reaction.
Right.
And it was so exciting when people would pay attention, and maybe they wouldn't laugh for a page, and then they'd suddenly all laugh, and I realized, oh, they were paying attention. They were involved. And then other times when I could see people look away a little bit, I knew to cut a paragraph. It was incredible.
Did you have stuff that you felt like, hey, this is part of my favorite part, and no one's paying attention? Did you have that?
Sometimes, and it made me really hard on my own work, which is always a good thing. This is just my way of doing it.
Right. A couple questions real quick off the book. And again, the book is called One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories. It's available everywhere today, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Target, all retailers. It's BJ's first book. It looks very funny. Of course, his company was too cheap to send us advances, so we haven't read it, but I hear it's great.
Thank you.
How has your life changed now that you're close personal friends?
I'll send you the audiobook. How's that?
Yeah, there you go.
Perfect. How has your life changed, BJ, now that you're close personal friends with Tom Hanks as a result of working on Saving Mr. Banks? I can't imagine how much fun it must be to know Tom Hanks.
It's the amazing thing is it feels exactly like before you knew Tom Hanks, because he has this vibe that you think, oh, I knew we knew each other.
Really?
Like, hey, BJ. And you're like, oh, right. He was looking at me through the movie screen, too. he just has that familiar energy. So I feel like we've known each other since I saw Big at age 10.
Now, would he take your calls today?
Different. What's that?
Could you call him today? Would he answer the phone?
I definitely don't have his number.
Okay.
I could email
okay.
his assistant. Okay. Is that impressive?
Not really.
There are
but, you know,
some...
his assistant did send me an email that he had a typewritten letter for me, which I'm very excited to get. That's this thing. He has a typewriter, and he writes personal notes on a typewriter.
I always wondered
if I get one.
It could be a brush-off note, though. Let's not get too excited too soon, BJ.
It's funny, though. It could be a bill.
There are some people who are among the biggest stars in the world, and Tom Hanks is one guy, Bono is another, Bill Clinton is said to possess this quality, too, where they do make you feel comfortable being around them, even though they're so famous, and they don't have to be nice to you, yet somehow they make you feel like you're actually friends when you're in the room.
Yeah, it's a real skill. I do not have that skill. I have the opposite.
Now
Everyone thinks I hate them. I just because of my sort of default face, I have a very straight face, and I'm just kind of staring and thinking, I hope they like me. And then I hear everyone thinks I hate them.
A couple of people on Twitter said, when you're talking to BJ, ask him if he can tell us anything about the upcoming Superman. I'm sorry, Spider-Man.
Superman,
yes,
I have no
Ultimate
idea.
Spider Slayer. Can you tell us anything?
I can tell you a little bit. I play Alistair Smythe, who is an employee of Oscorp. And he supervises Jamie Foxx's character and is involved in the chain of events that leads to Jamie Foxx becoming Electro.
Nice. And The Amazing Spider-Man 2, this is one of those movies that we're all getting excited about way too early. Like, it's not out for 2 years or something, right?
Yeah, it's not this summer. It's not too far.
Yeah. Oh, then we can get excited about it. Okay, fantastic.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, great deal. All right, we're out of time. The book is called One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories. BJ, I don't know if we've ever talked to you before on the show. I feel like we have, but please,
if
you ever have time, come in and see us so we can spend some more time with you. We'd really enjoy that.
I've never been in person, and I can't wait.
Okay, let's do it. Thanks so much. Congratulations on the book.
Don't forget my birthday next year. It means a lot to me.
We will. Done. Thanks, BJ.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. I believe it will be 24 hours from right now. We will be doing Breakfast with Jack White.
Yes.
Pretty cool.
That is correct. That's at the Red Bull Sound Space here at K-Rock. And Lincoln Park is coming by next week. If you want to be there close and in up close and in person for that event, you can go to krock.com for more details about that. And you can win them this hour on the Kevin and Bean Show between now and 8 o'clock. Give you a chance to win tickets for Lincoln Park and the Red Bull Sound Space on the Kevin and Bean Show.
So a lot of people get married. A lot of people get divorced. And there are a lot of reasons for people getting divorced. Usually you don't know what the reason is. They just say irreconcilable differences. Mm-hmm. But there's a story in the news where a Japanese woman loves the movie Frozen so much that when her husband said, "Do you really think it's that good?" filed for divorce.
Wow.
Now, was everything happy leading up to that point? I have no idea.
Right.
He says it was. We talked about this guy when this story broke. He was on a website called The Gravesite of Married People. That's the English translation of a Japanese website. And he was, you know, it's one of those chat rooms, basically, where you talk about relationships and problems, mm-hmm. and they try to help each other out. And he said, as far as I know, the marriage was going fine up until then. We didn't have any financial problems. We don't have any kids together. I thought we were happy. But then this Frozen thing happened. And she, the fact that I'm not as crazy about it as she is, in her mind, makes me unfit to be her husband.
So we're going to look for the relationship deal breakers. The smaller, the better. The more insanely reasons don't matter, the smaller, the better. She said to her husband, if you can't understand what makes this movie great, there's something wrong with you as a human being. And divorced him.
Now, is she right? Is there something wrong with him as a human being if he can't understand why Frozen is so great?
I think there's something wrong with her that this movie has taken up such a space in her.
But it's so good, Lisa.
She was clearly so empty inside, yes. and yes. this movie got in there. I mean, just...
Now, this is a husband-wife breaking up. This is a divorce. That her deal breaker is that he didn't like Frozen as much as she did.
By the way, he didn't hate it.
Yeah.
He didn't hate it, right?
Not as much.
He just said, is it really that good?
Right.
She was like, whoa, something wrong with you. I'm going to divorce you.
But I think we'll also get calls from people who realize they couldn't continue to date somebody, boyfriend or girlfriend.
Right.
Or early on in the dating relationship, you thought this person was perfect, but then, fill in the blank, they did this or like that or, you know, said that or whatever.
And there's always religion. There's always kids. There's politics. Yeah.
Look, there are some very legitimate deal breakers.
Right.
Absolutely. There are reasons why you don't want to be with somebody.
But we want less legitimate deal breakers.
So we're taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. We want to hear about your deal breakers. All right. Here's another one for you. And this just posted this week. As we mentioned earlier, the World Cup is getting ready to begin this week, right? Here's a guy who came up with an official contract for his girlfriend during the World Cup. Now, you tell me if this is a deal breaker or not. This is what he asked. This is what he gave to her to sign. From June 12th through July 13th, the TV is mine at all times. That's number one. Number two, when England are playing, it's an all-day event. He is in the UK. Number three, walking in front of the TV at any time is strictly forbidden.
Oh, my God.
Number four, the replays of the goals are very important. I don't care if I've seen them already. I want to see them again. Number five, the fridge must be stocked with beer and cider 24/7.
Is this like,
wait a minute.
This is real.
Is he doing this to be funny, though? He is not doing this. He is doing this to get his house in order for the World Cup viewing. Number six, if and when England loses, do not say it's only a game, get over it, or they will win next time. Number seven, all love and affection must wait until halftime or when the games have finished.
Wow.
Eight, any other events that may occur during the World Cup must be discussed or arranged accordingly. Nine, do not ask what the offside rule is. And number 10, if you hear me shout your name, be ready to A, grab me a drink, B, grab me a snack, or C, get batteries for the remote.
Wow.
His name is James Jelly, by the way. His girlfriend's name is Victoria Stewart, and she signed it.
Yeah!
She did.
Oh, if I'm Victoria,
yes.
At the very least, I'm leaving town for that. And he
yes.
can pay for it, by the way.
Exactly. Not a deal breaker for her, but that would be a deal breaker for most people,
oh my
right?
God, that's insane.
But that's what makes me think that maybe there's some tongue-in-cheek going on here. Like, maybe he's just
letting her know this is really important to me, and she's
maybe
laughing along. Otherwise, why would she sign that? That's absurd.
Why would she sign that indeed? All right, 1-800-520-1067. Looking for deal breakers that busted up a relationship for you. Let's go to John. He's on line three. He's in Anaheim. This is exactly what we're talking about.
Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Hi. Thank you. Deal breaker.
So I dated a girl back in high school. I'm kind of a nerd, and I really like Star Wars. And I dated a girl, and she told me, she's like, oh, yeah, I love Star Wars. It's great. And we got in a huge argument because her favorite character was Jar Jar Binks.
Wow. And most people who, most Star Wars fans just think that was a disaster.
It was a travesty to the series.
So you had an argument with her over Jar Jar Binks in the Star Wars movies, and that ended it?
That was, I mean, there was other things, but that was one of the big things that really, like,
John,
started the end.
You made the right call.
I and that's what all my friends told
now,
me.
No, you really, honestly, you really did. That's just unacceptable. It's unacceptable. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's do Andrew real quick. He's on line two. He's in Santa Monica. Andrew, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hey, Lisa May, Kevin Bean, everybody.
Good morning.
Hi. Relationship deal breakers.
Good morning. Yeah, so I was dating this beautiful blonde just last year, and I found out that she was allergic to pork, so I had to end it.
Wait, was she allergic to porking or just pork?
She was totally okay with porking, but she couldn't do bacon, and I chose bacon over her.
But that didn't mean you couldn't eat it, did it?
What? That's an odd thing.
I took us to one restaurant, and I had some pork with it. And one kiss, an hour later, swelled her face up.
Oh, it's one of those deals like the peanut guys where she can't even kiss you if you've had bacon. Gotcha.
I gotta have bacon.
She may be better off in this case.
I agree.
All right. Thank you, Andrew, for the call.
Wow. These are awesome, by the way. Let's go to Nadia. Let's hear from the lady's perspective. She's on line one, also in Santa Monica. Nadia, thank you for listening and for calling. What happened?
Okay. So I started dating this one guy. And for some reason, like, every other sentence or word was my name. So he'd be like, Nadia, it's such a beautiful day, right, Nadia? Or Nadia, I love the way you look. Nadia, it's just amazing. Or things like that. And I was just like, oh, my God, I couldn't stand it. Like, I could count, like, 30 or 40 times.
I've never heard of that.
So clearly you brought it up to him. Why wouldn't he stop doing it once you pointed it out?
I don't know. I think it's just like I don't know what he was doing, honestly.
That's a weird, annoying thing. I've never really heard of somebody saying your name too often.
Do you think it's possible that he was afraid he was going to forget your name or call you by the wrong name, and that was like his way of making sure he always kept it front and center in his head?
I don't think so. I just think like he was trying to, in his way, maybe thought that was special if he kept using my name over and over.
Well, Nadia, that's just weird, Nadia. I can't even believe that happened to you, Nadia. I'm glad you called, though, Nadia. Thanks a lot for listening, Nadia.
We'll take your calls coming up, 1-800-520-1067.
Doto, the international man of mystery, joins us in about 15 minutes or so with some brand new Man on the Street interviews. That's coming up. Right now, we're talking dating deal breakers here on the Kevin and Bean Show at 1-800-520-1067. Mallory writes in on the Kevin and Bean Facebook page, hey, I dumped my boyfriend of 3 years because he only ever tipped 5% when we went out. He wasn't poor, just a cheap a-hole.
Yeah, I can see that. That's just a sign of bigger problems, I would guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Matt says if a girl has arm hair, she's got to go. And Ruben writes in, if they like beer mug, ties must be cut.
Well, I think that's probably the best reason.
That makes a lot of sense. So we're taking your calls, too, at 1-800-520-1067. Who's up next?
We got into this because there's a woman in Japan who divorced her husband because he was not as big a fan of the movie Frozen as she was, which is ridiculous. Let's start with Melissa in Long Beach. Hi there. Hello, Melissa.
Hey, Melissa. What's going on?
Hi. Okay, so mine is I was dating this guy, white guy. I'm Creole. So he went out of his way to act black.
Like talking like a rapper and whatever?
Oh, it was bad. He was wearing do-rags and white beaters and, like, the long train, Flavor Flav on crack, circa 1970s pimp-looking guy. He had a weed prescription. He had it freaking laminated and started walking up to random black people. Yeah, man, I got a script.
Oh, my God.
What's up, pretty mama? And I was like, the hell?
That is awesome. So there was just, like, he couldn't stop.
No, I was like, it was some kind of disease. I don't know what it was.
That's sweet.
That's hilarious. Thank you very much for the call, Melissa. We appreciate it. Let's go to Stacy. She's on line three. She's up next calling from L.A.
Hi, Stacy.
Hi. Good morning, guys.
Talking about relationship deal breakers. What's yours?
He bought generic cereal.
How dare him?
Are you kidding?
Generic cereal.
I know it sounds crazy, but you know, the crispy hexagons instead of Crispix or the Toastios instead of Cheerios, I just couldn't do it.
Come on. You can't live with a man who serves Toastios, Kevin.
By the way, I'm with you on that.
Absolutely.
I'm with you on that. I'm a awesome breakfast cereal savant.
That's awesome. Thank you, Stacy. Appreciate that. Wow, these are some great calls. Let's go to Garrett. He's on line four. He's in Encino. I think this is a legitimate deal breaker, this one.
And I'll bet this happens a lot.
A lot, yeah.
Garrett, hi. Let me try that again.
Who was
hi, Garrett.
Beautiful. Hello.
Sorry.
Hey,
I'm
Garrett.
So
what's going on, dude?
Hey, I started dating a girl who was just beautiful, sweet, kind. It was February, right? March comes around and spring training comes around. And what do I find out? She's a San Francisco Giants fan.
Yeah. And that will not abide, right?
That will not abide. That's not acceptable. It was so heartbreaking for me, honestly. I felt I had to do it because she was so passionate about hating the team I love.
Yeah.
You know?
That,
I mean, could not take it.
And I know that non-sports fans are listening right now and saying, well, that's just stupid. But you spend a lot of your time rooting for, watching, talking about whatever your favorite team is. And if you're head-to-head at odds and it's not in a friendly way with somebody in your house, that's exhausting.
Yes, it's 6 months baseball season.
Yeah.
That's half a year of this pleasure.
Yeah.
You know, who wants that?
Yeah, you made the right call.
You got to be able to find. There's got to be a girl out there for you who likes the Dodgers too, right?
Yeah.
Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go to Gloriana. Gloriana, hi.
Hi.
What?
Hi, Kevin, Dean, Lisa, May. Good morning.
Good morning. Deal breaker.
I was dating the perfect guy in every way. His looks, his intelligence, his family. Perfect marriage material. I had to give him the nickname the repeater. Every time I said something, he would have to repeat it.
So every time you said something, he would repeat it.
It was out of control.
That sounds out of control.
If I said, I'm hungry, he'd say, are you hungry?
Wait, if you said, I'm hungry, he would say, I'm hungry too?
Yes, just like that.
So what happened?
Just like that?
You had to bring it up to him. What did he say?
I did, and you know, I said...
You had to bring it up to him. What did he say?
I said, Eric, why do you repeat everything that I always say? And he said...
Why do I repeat everything you always say?
Again, you made the right call.
I gave it 3 months. I couldn't handle it.
Thank you for the call.
She gave it 3 months. She couldn't handle it.
Let's go to Barry and Torrance. All right. Now we're getting into minutiae here. You guys tell me if this is legit.
Oh, no. This is my favorite. Barry, hi.
Good morning, party people.
Deal breaker for a relationship.
So I was dating a girl in the wintertime. Come springtime, she put on open-toed shoes, sandals the first time. Her index toe was longer than her big toe. I couldn't handle it.
Now...
I'm going to tell you something.
I'm going to suggest that's normal.
My boyfriend is just like this. Like, honked up feet, deal breaker.
Really?
Done.
But they don't have to be honked up for that toe to be longer.
Well, to some people, that looks honked up.
But what?
I think it's crazy.
Barry, what does it matter to you whether one toe is longer than it should be or not?
It just stuck out. It was creepy. It was in sandals. It hung out. Ugh.
It hung out.
So you're just afraid it was going to attack you in the middle of the night or something?
Yes.
Could you date a woman if she had a finger missing?
Probably not. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. At least Barry knows what his limitations are.
Yeah.
All right. That is legit. Thanks so much for the call.
Speaking of legit,
exactly.
Which has been canceled now, unfortunately. Yeah. Jim Jefferies show. He was talking about meeting the perfect woman until he realized she had a flaw.
Look at her. She's perfect. She's funny. She's pretty. She's caring. She might be the one. I can't find a single problem with her. Two black people walk by and she says the N-word.
Like the N-word, N-word?
Is there another N-word? You just said the N-word.
No, how does she say it?
Man, can you believe all these...
Like Paula Deen and Kramer talking in a car.
Wow.
Oh,
Jim's in love with a racist.
I'm not in love with a racist. I like a girl who happens to be a racist.
Maybe she's got Tourette's.
Wouldn't that be great?
World's greatest rock band, Just Ask Him, Tenacious D, joins us in studio this hour on The Kevin and Bean Show. Also, Petros Papadakis joins us for the Bachelorette Report later on, and your chance to ask a lawyer. We had Dr. Drew on a few days ago talking about the rise of MRSA infections around this country. Now, apparently, I didn't know too much about this, but you do see stories every once in a while. There are two different kinds of MRSA, you guys. It's a bacteria that some people get in hospitals when they're in there. And then the more worrying kind of MRSA infection is happening now among healthy people, where all of a sudden you get a skin boil and it's spread by skin-to-skin contact, and it's common with people who are, you know, just hanging out with lots of other people, like you're flying or something like that, and you just pick something up from somebody. The next thing you know, you got MRSA, and you're in the hospital, and they're amputating stuff.
Now, we tried to convince everybody that you were going to die, and most likely today, but then we talked to Dr. Drew, and he said, oh, you're not going to get it. Don't worry about it.
Right. Yeah, he did try to make it seem like the chances of actually getting MRSA were pretty remote, and that was news to a Kevin and Bean listener named Louie, who wrote in and said that he, in fact, did have MRSA, and it was no picnic, and he joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Hi, Louie. How are you, man?
Good morning. It was indeed no picnic. Thank you.
I bet. How long ago did you have MRSA?
Oh, probably about 3.5-4 years ago.
And how do the doctors think you got it?
Well, there's a few theories. Obviously, you can get it just sitting on a bus stop, you know, anywhere public. I like to think I got mine. I played in a rec bar hockey league, and, you know, obviously the locker rooms aren't too sanitary. The equipment only washes so much, you know.
It's a much cooler way to get it, though.
Yeah, totally. It sounds better when you
Right. So walk us through. What was your first indication that you were sick?
Well, you know, I had a game on Tuesday night. I went to work the next day and started feeling this irritation on the inside of my leg. And then within, I'd say about 24 hours after that, I started to get really sick, like flu-like, fever, vomiting. I couldn't eat, couldn't drink. And that went on for about 3 or 4 days. And this was right before Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving was pretty much everyone's heads up that, you know, something was wrong. I didn't eat my usual, you know, 10 pounds of food.
I said 3 or 4 days. I would guess that's normal just because you figured it was the flu. There's nothing they can do.
Right. And because I was preoccupied with heaving every 5 seconds.
Sure.
I think I didn't really notice what was happening, you know, on my leg. And, you know, eventually it kind of turned into, it looked like a spider bite. And then it kind of just morphed into this growth. And it turned red, and then it kind of recessed back down in the skin, but it still hurt to the touch.
Ew.
Wife's kind of like, okay, you know, you got to go.
You got to go, meaning she's divorcing you? Or
no, you got to go to the hospital. You got to go to at least the clinic. You got to go get it checked out, see what it is. You've been here for 4 days. You know, it's hurting me, you know.
So. Yeah, I mean, 4 days, even for the flu, that's a long time to not start to see some improvement. Usually those things work their way through. So you go to the clinic, and they look at you, and they go, dude, emergency room now, right?
Exactly what happened. I went to, like, a little clinic down here. I live in Doherty area out here by the 605. So I went to the El Monte USC clinic, and they basically said, go straight there. Don't stop. Don't go anywhere else. Don't do anything. Go straight there.
Did they tell you what it was at that point?
They had no idea. They looked horrified, and that kind of spooked me.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so you get to the emergency room, and then what happens, Louie?
300 people there waiting to be seen.
Oh, that's my God. Sweet.
Oh.
I'm over-exaggerating, obviously, but, I mean, there's at least 150 people sitting in the waiting room outside trying to get seen. I tell the lady what I'm feeling. She says, go back here. And immediately I'm ushered into a separate room where they, you know, it's kind of like the next in line. I kind of just bypass everybody. Vitals taken, and then within 10 minutes of that, I'm in a room by myself, which looks like an emergency, like an operating room, but I'm solo. There's no one else in there, no lights on. About 4 hours after, 4 hours later, they finally, or not 4 hours later, it's more like 2 hours later, they took me into my first surgery.
Into your first surgery?
Whoa.
Wow. And what were they, trying to just dig out something out of your leg?
They were doing an exploratory, is what they told my wife. They wanted to see what was going on, so they're going to open it up, go inside, see what it is. So.
And so that was one surgery.
That was one surgery. That was the first day.
Okay. All right. And then what happens next?
After that, I basically had two more surgeries in those next 2 days, although I don't remember. I was sedated, put into a medically induced sedation to not experience anything. So basically, wow. I woke up 3 days later, opened my eyes, and I'm restrained. I have the tube down the throat so you can't talk. I see my wife there. I kind of motioned her, like, you know, what's going on? You know, so, you know, it was pretty mind-boggling to open your eyes again after 3 days and not realize that those days had passed.
I bet. And I bet you also were terrified and looked down to make sure you know they didn't take a leg off or something.
This is the thing. I couldn't feel anything, so I didn't want to know anything or see anything other than my wife and what happened. Why? What am I doing here?
Wow.
And she basically said that you know, they did a surgery, and they kind of, you know, she started to explain it, but I was so sedated, I didn't really put it together that they had already taken a chunk out. They had opened up my leg, and I had an open wound on my leg with this, like, vacuum thing on it.
Ugh.
To, like, keep the wound moist so that I could stay open but not die, and all kinds of crazy stuff.
So, Louis, you said in your email that you ended up staying in the hospital for 37 days. You had 13 surgeries, which each of those surgeries, them going in and just trying to get more and more of the bacteria-infected tissue out?
Yes, the last three of the four surgeries were like a bereavement, which is to just go in and clean out every infected area that has any trace of it. And so,
how close were you to dying?
I didn't know this till later, but a few months later, I saw the main surgeon where I work. Like, I just kind of bumped into him, and my boss asked him, "So, how close was he?" And he basically told me it was about a 15% to 20% chance that I was going to live through the day.
Oh my God.
Another mind blown. You're standing in front of your coworkers. You're like, oh, okay, I didn't even know that.
And your wife, by the way, at the time of this incident, was 8.5 months pregnant?
She was. I went in November 28th, 29th, something like that, and she gave birth on January 13th.
That is a weird Christmas for you guys. I'll tell you that.
She got out a week before she was born, so there.
How are the scars?
How are the scars?
Oh, they're pretty epic. I don't go swimming too much anymore. You know, it's not that I don't. It's like I feel uncomfortable. It's just I don't want to make other people feel uncomfortable.
Right. Do you have any pain anymore, or are you completely recovered?
I feel like I'm completely recovered. Technically, in the state of California, I'm disabled. So if I didn't want to work, I didn't have to. But
sweet.
Yeah, but I'm not doing that.
How do I get that deal?
Now, you also said in your email, Louis, and we're so grateful that you wrote in. It's so interesting to talk to you, and I can't even imagine what it was like for your family going through this. But you said you had no insurance at the time. How did that resolve itself?
You know, the jobs that I've had, you know, they haven't really been offered through work. And then on top of that, like, trying to get my kids covered was the most important thing.
But I can't even imagine how expensive that hospital stay and all those surgeries was.
I think I got a bill once. It didn't say I owed any money, but it was over $1 million.
Oh, my God. Dude.
So if I try to buy a house at some point, they're just going to kind of, you know what? Maybe you want to.
They're just going to put you down.
Yeah.
You know, the most terrifying thing about your story, Louis, is that it wasn't risky behavior. You were just living your life doing stuff that people do, and it just happened to you, just randomly. There's nothing you could have done to avoid getting MRSA.
Not unless I knew to, like, take colder baths so that bacteria doesn't survive. I mean, there's so many different things that people tell me now, like, you know, how to take care of yourself. You know?
Like what? Tell us how to avoid getting that.
Supposedly, bacteria only sticks to hot water, so when you take hot showers, it, like, survives through it. But, like, at the very end, if you take, like, a cold rinse, you might be able to get some of it off.
Well, that's not worth it. Sorry.
Cold water is for the birds. All right. Well, phenomenal story, and we're so grateful that you survived it, and the wife's fine, the baby's fine, everybody's good now?
Yeah, I got two beautiful girls, three beautiful girls. I have my wife, I have my two daughters, everything's good. You know, I just... I'm forever grateful for the people at LA County USC, the Keck Medical Center. Their trauma team it's unreal what they did, because you read about the girl in Georgia and she lost two arms and two legs.
Yeah.
Like, wow, you know, and she went in the first day. I talked to a woman whose husband died after 2 days. He went on a hiking trip up here in the mountains, got scratched somehow, something got in, and within 2 days he was gone.
Would you say that it's probable that all of our listeners will have this by tonight?
That's very doubtful.
Oh.
I think I think if you do anything different than what you're normally doing, you want it to happen. You know, you want something to happen. Just go out and do what you're going to do, and if something wants to grow on your leg, then it will.
Wow. Louis, thanks so much for writing, man. We really appreciate the time, especially you coming on and sharing your story with us today. Good luck to you, my friend.
I gotta get my girls ready for school now.
Okay, man. We'll let you get to it. Bye-bye now.
Bye now.
Kevin and Bean's Breakfast with Jack White. K-Rock.
We are in the Red Bull sound space here at K-Rock, Kevin and Bean Show. Exciting day for us today, Kevin.
Why is that?
Because we've been wanting to do this breakfast forever.
Right,
today
breakfast.
Is the day, ladies and gentlemen. Jack White is here. White.
That is the sharpest outfit anyone has ever worn inside the building here at K-Rock. Seriously, you look like you're in the Time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Hello, everybody. How are you?
Well, welcome, Jack. Happy record release week. How's it been for you this week?
It's been a while. It's whirlwind. We're playing in three shows in L.A. right now, and I think three shows today right now, and we're in New York, I think 30 hours ago. So I'll sleep at the end of the week, I think.
Yeah, next week you're going to just try and catch up?
It's feeling good. It feels good. Everyone's so energetic right now. It's a good time of the year, isn't it?
I know this record you spent a little bit more time on than you have on some of your past records. Does it screw with your head at some point when you do a song and then months go by and it's still not out, and do you still like it and you got to revisit it, and how's it all work together as an album? Is it quite a process when you spend a year doing an album to get everything lined up the way you want it before you finally release it?
Yeah, I think the first time I felt that was when I was in a band called The White Stripes, and we did an album called White Blood Cells, and that came out, and we went in and recorded our next album, Elephant, and really fast, like in 10 days. But Blood Cells from before that was still selling so well, they wouldn't let us put it out. So that sat in the can for a year, and we were sitting there waiting to put it out for over a year. But the song still felt good a year later on that one. We got lucky with that one. But I could imagine, some things you get so far away from. You know, so hard for me to listen to a record I made like 3 years ago. It's very hard. You have to like let some time go by.
How long did it take for this one, for Lazaretto?
This one took 2.5 days.
So that is a long time for you.
It is.
Usually you do 40 songs in that amount of time. You're slow. I never heard the word Lazaretto before until I was recently reading a book on the history of the Black Plague. And that word...
Oh, you're the other guy.
That word came up. And my understanding from the way it was presented in the book was that's where they sent all the people with the plague to die, basically. It was like a hospice or a quarantine or something like that. Is that the meaning of the word as you understand it? And why did you name the album that?
I guess it has a couple of meanings. One of them was a quarantine island. That's the word. That's the definition I had heard years ago, is a quarantine island. So that I just had written it down. I thought, oh, I really like the sound of that word and the look of that word. I like the way it looks even. I don't know. Just sort of you try to collect those words here and there when you're a songwriter and you work on things like that. So, at the end, I was going to call the album Wit of the Staircase, but I thought it was too complicated, too much of a mouthful to say that name. That was a French phrase about... when you think of the perfect retort at the end of an argument as you're walking up the stairs. The wit of the staircase, but Lazaretto is a little easier to say.
How many notes do you have of just interesting...
Well, there's only like 12 on the
interesting
piano.
Interesting-looking words?
Yes. How many notes are on a piano?
No, not on the piano. How many notes have you taken of words that you find interesting or that look cool? I've not heard of that.
Yeah, I don't really keep a journal anymore, but I write them down or I'll look them up and I'll save it. If it's a computer, I'll save that or I'll write it down on a sheet of paper when we're working on songs. But if it's a phrase, I have to sing it and play a different instrument, a piano or a guitar, and try to memorize it that way, or I'll forget it. I usually do forget half of them.
Do you write it on napkins at a restaurant or whatever?
Sometimes. But a better thing is to hum it. Give it a melody, and then I usually remember it.
This is the voice of Jack White here on the Kevin Bean Show. It's Breakfast with Jack White in the Red Bull Sound Space here at K-Rock. I'm fascinated with so many things about the way you work, Jack, particularly songwriting. One of the things I've heard you say in the past is you are not a guy who can write an album if it's not due for a year. You're a guy who needs a deadline. You're a guy who, I got studio time booked tomorrow, I better write a song. So when you sit down with that kind of pressure, what gets you going? I mean, is it a blank piece of paper, or do you sit down and start tooling around on an instrument, or how do you even get started to write a number?
If you stick yourself in a corner and you have to... I like to stick myself in a corner where I have to fight my way out. Sometimes in the studio, I'll even tell the band I have a song, and they think that I have a song, but I don't have one.
So you lie to them. Yeah.
But if I told them I don't have a song, then their minds will be, oh, okay, and then they might even think to help write it, you know. But if you don't want that scenario if you're songwriters in certain cases, because you, for me, I'm trying to get in a corner where I'll have to figure out my way out of this problem. And that's a technique I've used a few times.
You ever find yourself in that corner? You put yourself there and you can't figure out a way out?
Yeah, I did that the other day, and it turned out that it was just a closet in my house.
Oh.
So, Is there a muse? Is there some sort of inspiration, some sort of divine touch? Where does it come from, do you think? Or does that take the magic out of it if you try to guess?
You know, I think the assumption is when you really present things to people and it looks a certain way, it has a presentation that, you know, it's all about control or being a control freak or things, words like that. But you really, I think it's a bad place to be when you're writing a song, is to feel as if you are in control of the song. I mean, it's very ridiculous and egotistical to think you're actually the one in control of what's happening. I mean, maybe some people can get an ego buzz from that, like I wrote this song, but I never feel that way. I always feel like you're just an antenna and you let God in the room and let something happen. And you put all the pieces in the place and then it starts to happen on your own. You're just sort of a conduit or a director or a vessel or something like that. And then things start to happen. But if you ever start to think this is song happened because I controlled it and I made it happen, it's not really what's going on there.
Yeah, see? Right. Let's hear it for being humble. Yeah. Jack White is here, Breakfast With on the Kevin Bean Show. We'll take a quick break. Mr. White is going to be performing for us this morning, and we'll include your questions when we return right after this on K-Rock.
You mean like a big breakfast machine?
Kevin and Bean's Breakfast with Jack White, world-famous K-Rock. K-Rock.
It is, Breakfast with Jack White. Love it. You should never be asked to play rock and roll before noon, by the way, Jack. So thank you in advance for what you're about to do. We very much appreciate you being here. The new album, Lazaretto, is out this week, by the way. Everybody buy it already? Now, Jack, are you personally offended if every one of these people did not buy it on vinyl? Is that an insult to you? I feel like it might be.
No, I bought it on iTunes this morning. So
yeah. I bought it on CD form, and I was like, I don't know if Jack's going to be happy about this.
So that's cool. You don't care how we buy it as long as we buy it, right?
No, I think all formats are cool. I mean, it's all about where and when, you know? I think we said some phrase a year ago, something like, yeah, you know, digital in the car, vinyl in the bedroom, you know? Just a twist on some other phrase, I think.
You grew up buying vinyl records?
I did, yeah, and cassettes too, but vinyl records. Remember kind when cassettes used to have that long plastic thing that was about 14 inches long, so you couldn't steal it?
That was great for the environment. That was.
Really good, really good.
What kind of a record collector were you? Did you buy a lot of records? Were they handed down from your parents? How did it work for you as a kid?
My brothers and sisters had a pretty big record collection, and my parents did too. They were into a lot of, you know, Nat King Cole and 1940s and 50s music, and my brothers were into rock and roll and country music, and so there was a lot of records around the house. You know, all the Beatles and Rolling Stones records were easily available in the house, but I didn't get into punk records and things until I was a teenager on my own.
Tell us about recording an album. I think you just did with Neil Young in what looks like a phone booth. Tell us about that. Like, how did you come up with the idea? How did you sell it to Neil Young?
That's a long story, but I'll try to make it fast. I was, for about 10, 15 years, I've been looking for an old recording booth. I'd read about them, heard about them, and I always thought when I was younger I was going to find one. We went on a tour somewhere. Oh, we'll see one in Australia or in Europe or something. I've never saw one ever, even one that was broken. And I went down this a lot of blind paths. I went to, like, you know, empty warehouses. A guy said he had one, and it wasn't. It was a pinball machine or something, you know. So anyways, I finally found one through these coin op machine collectors, and I bought it, and we refurbished it for about a year and a half, and we got it going. And when we debuted it on Record Store Day at Third Man Records, that day, Neil Young just happened to come by through Nashville, and he has this electric Lincoln car. He's making an electric car. He's going on a tour of America in it. And he just stopped by, and it was nice to see him. We both have electric cars. I have a Tesla, and we were going to talk to each other about that in his film. And when he was there, I was telling him about the booth, and a kid came in, and there was a curtain, and a kid came in and recorded one of Neil's songs in the booth. And when a kid walked out, Neil peeked his head out.
That's weird.
Freaked him out. And he just said, I got to come back and record in here. And a couple months later, he called me and goes, hey, I want to come and do my new album in the booth. Well, I said, I'm not going to stop you.
Help me understand, in an age when everybody is trying to make advances, help me understand the beauty of analog in the old days. Because I'm not trying to be a smartass.
No,
like,
for
I
sure.
I don't get that.
Yeah, it's like a sort of a thing. If you see a black and white photograph, it takes on an air of romance because you have to concentrate and imagine so much of it that the materials that aren't present there. It forces your brain to sort of get involved in the scenario. If you listen to a 1920s, you know, like a Al Jolson record or a Charlie Patton record, I could see it turning off a lot of people. It's very crackly and you can't hear what they're saying half the time. But if you can get your mind set into that idea, it becomes incredibly romantic. So this is a night almost like how you would hear if Neil Young recorded under the same conditions as Jimmy Rogers or young Hank Williams. This is how they would have recorded it. And in a sense, that record, you're getting as close as you possibly can to Neil Young because he did, you know, he wrote a letter to his mom in heaven in the booth. That's the first track of the record. I've never seen something so personal from him. So if you can get your mind past the ideas, you can get very even deeper into something, I think.
Yeah, you kind of strip away a lot of the things that stand between you and the artist with all the technology and everything. I see what you're saying. Let's go to Dave, the King of Mexico, our producer, who's here on the Kevin and Bean Show with Breakfast with Jack White. Dave, you got our first question from the audience. Who's it going to be? All right. I'm here with Jackie. Jackie, go ahead.
Hi. Okay, so Jack, you mentioned in previous interviews that some of the lyrics on the new album come from various one-act plays that you wrote when you were 19. Would you ever consider writing a play or a movie for yourself to star in?
Yeah, there's one I was working on called The Jack White Story. That
I don't think you're right for that.
It's in pre-production now. It's about half done. A little less than half done. No, I would like to do that to answer your question, Jackie. I would love to do that. I've done that a bunch, and I would like to work more on films and plays in the next few years, actually, when I get tired of this music. Hoo-ha. Just kidding.
Dave, let's do one more for right now.
This is Alex. Sounds good.
All right, so I know that you've collaborated with a lot of different artists. So are there any artists that you would want to collaborate with that you haven't already worked with before, and why?
Well, there's some people that, you know, I was hoping to meet and I never got to because they passed on, like Captain Beefheart and George Jones and people like that. I never got to see live and never got to meet them. And that's too bad. Nowadays, we've been kind of, in the last year, I've kind of worked with a couple of people. We did a live album with Willie Nelson at Third Man Records, and that was someone I really wanted to work with. And there's a lot of, every week there's a couple of new people coming up that are doing new things. And the good thing about Third Man Records is they come and we get to do things like that. We get to work on a Blues Series record, a single with them or a live album for them. But I can't think of another name right now other than those people. Sorry.
You worked a little with Jay-Z, Kanye,
yeah,
you were
right,
talking about?
Yeah. They're pretty good. Yeah.
Third Man recording artist Jack White is here. Who wants to hear a little live music this morning on the Kevin and Bean Show? Play it, Jack!
This song is called Just One Drink.
right there is how it's done. Breakfast with Jack White here on the Kevin and Bean Show. We'll be right back with more.
Would you like some breakfast?
Kevin and Bean's Breakfast with Jack White, the world famous K-Rock.
It is Breakfast with Jack White. We are back. Jack, we're so happy to have you today. We really appreciate you coming in this small room. I don't know what it holds, 200 people or something like that. Do you enjoy playing little places like this? Do you like playing bigger places? What's your...
Yeah, man.
You can actually make eye contact.
I'm exhausted.
Well, we didn't give you much room on this stage, I will tell you that. This is about as, this must take you back 15 years to play a room this small.
Yeah. I like it, man. This is like the stage at Third Man. It's about this size. These are the best kind of stages to be in. When you're pushed together as a band, my studio is like that too. It's very small and gets everyone to work together. If you get into a larger spaces and people are working in a studio, the bass player is like 20 feet away. You're not really in the same mindset. But if you're all locked together, I think it's a better environment.
On this tour that you're doing for Lazaretto, are you still have the two different backing bands? The one all male, one all female?
No, I don't have that this time because the schedules have been so crazy with all the musicians. They all have their own things going on. And
we didn't get a chance to ask you at the time that you were doing that how that happened. Like, what was there a difference in energy between which band you picked that night? How did you decide which band you were going to go on with that night?
When I recorded my last record, Blunderbuss, it was just a recording technique I had one day. So how about tomorrow? It's just all female musicians. Let's see and record the exact same song we did today with all the male musicians. Let's just see if something happens. I don't know. Maybe it means nothing. Maybe it's not. What if we had all 75-year-old musicians tomorrow? What would that do?
Seven-year-olds.
Yes. Exactly. So recording the same song with different people, I never had really done that while you're working on an album, so I thought I'd try that. And it was really interesting. And it has nothing to do with sexes or the group as a whole. It starts to come down to individual players are just so different from each other that you get different intonations. But, the mood changes. If you have a room full of, gorilla guys in a room and you bring one girl in who's just standing there holding a coffee or something and watching, it changes everybody's attitude in the room. If I bring my mom in and have her sit down while we're playing, we're all going to act differently too, So it's you can do all kinds of tricks to make everybody in the room change their attitude to the song.
And you believe a lot in chemistry with a band. I mean, you guys improv as you go. Your musicians are talented enough to just watch what you're doing and keep up, right? And you follow them sometimes. I mean, it's kind of like jazz in a way where you put different people together in a room and it's not going to go the same way every time.
Yeah, jazz, is that like a new website or something?
Yeah. Jazz.com.
Okay.
Check it out. Breakfast with Jack White. We go back to the crowd now. Dave, the King of Mexico, is out there with whom?
I'm here with a familiar face, our buddy Stryker.
Stryker!
Hey, everybody.
K-Rock Zone.
I love Lazaretto, so I want to geek out about that song for a minute. My question is this. It goes like dun, 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 dun. And that's like kind of goes through the entire song. It's like the backbone of the whole operation.
Could we hear some more of it, please?
Nope. That's okay. All I do. But that part of the song, like sometimes I get laser focused and I just hear that when I listen to the song, except like at 2 minutes it slows down. I would just like to know the inception of that song and that beat that goes all the way through. Like, I feel like that could be on a hip hop artist that did it in the 80s or some like psychedelic thing. How did that song come about musically for you?
It was an experiment. I heard about a songwriter writing where you listen to other music and think about it for a second and then erase that from your mind and then write the song immediately right then. And the song I had used to get me in a different spot was Cha-Cha-Cha by MC Light. I don't know if you know this song. And so I was listening to Cha-Cha-Cha and La Band who listened to it. Okay, listen to it. Now everybody forget about it. And now here's the bass line. And I told the bass player, these are the notes, blah, 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 and play that. And then so we're sort of in the same, neighborhood is in the same vibe because you just got out of listening to that intensely, but you're not copying it. You're not trying to copy it or rip it off or anything like that. You're just trying to be in that moment. And some of that, I heard about other songwriters, you actually play along with a song, play along with an old song. The whole band plays along and then you take the other song away and you continue playing, and then you just change chords as you go on. That's another technique. It's some folk process people use. So that's how I got to Lazaretto.
It feels like you're making life as difficult as possible on yourself. Like you're really pushing yourself in every way you can figure out.
Well, if somebody says, today, like, I really like that song, like he just said, I mean, now I can say to myself, I'm proud of that. Because if I had said,
we ripped off some other thing, and engineer worked on it on a computer for 2 weeks, and I was in Jamaica the whole time. I don't even. Yeah. But thanks. Yeah. You know, I want to feel like if you tell me, I love that song. I know how it was done, so now I can appreciate it more.
Let's hear Lazaretto right now. What do you guys think? Title song from the new album, available everywhere now. Jack White.
Breakfast with Jack White, the world famous K.
You'll get breakfast in 10 minutes.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show. Breakfast with Jack White, the world famous K Rock.
We're back. It is breakfast with Jack White. Who I think it's safe to say is about to tear this space down.
Yes, I think so.
By the way, you can see this. I appreciate everyone that's listening to this on the radio right now, but you can see this performance. It's streaming for 24 hours from the Red Bull Soundspace at krock.com, so you can watch it over and over and over again to your little heart's content. Jack, a couple more things, and then we'll get back to some more questions here in the crowd. Seven Nation Army is a song that has become so much bigger than you. 100 years from now, they'll still be playing it at college championship games. Tell me when you realized that that song had made the jump to some sort of a worldwide consciousness.
It had become a a soccer anthem at some point years ago in Europe, and a friend of mine had went on his honeymoon and said on the beach there was a ship in the bay, and the people on the ship were chanting Seven Nation Army. The passengers on the ship were chanting it. It was a cruise ship, and he was sitting on the beach, and he had to write to me a letter and say, I can't believe what just happened. That this song, it was just a few years ago. And then that year, the president of Italy, because Italy won the World Cup, the president of Italy chanted the song from a balcony in Rome. Right
there. What the hell? That's never happened to me.
Yeah. So those were a couple of moments where I thought, I think maybe the song is connecting with people.
Are you surprised of all songs that one became the thing?
Yeah, very strange.
You don't know when you write it.
No, not at all. I remember my friend was with me when we wrote it at a sound check in Australia, and it was. I asked him, "What do you think of this riff?" And he was just like, "It's okay." And and further, I was trying to write a song with no chorus, to drive you in and hook you in as much as you can, but not have a chorus in the song. The song has no chorus. It's very hard to have a popular song that way. And also, the third thing I was crazy about is when we were releasing that album, the record labels, nobody wanted to put that out as a single. It was on nobody's mind.
Which can you...
But it's funny to think that way. It wasn't an obvious choice.
Rolling Stone magazine did a reader poll not long ago about the best Jack White songs. People could pick from anything. Their number one was Ball and Biscuit. Wow. That was the fans' favorite overwhelmingly. Does that surprise you? And what's your favorite?
What's my favorite? That is surprising. That's very, very surprising. That's such a... I've always had a big fondness for that song, though. And my favorite, I really don't know. I have a few that I really am fond of. This song I wrote called Cut Like a Buffalo with a Dead Rider. That's one of my favorites. And Same Boy You've Always Known is a White Stripes song I really like a lot. There's a few that really connect with me. Sometimes I don't play them for months. I think we've only played that one time on this whole tour, those songs, but... Save them for a certain moment.
That's right.
All right, let's do one more question from the crowd. Dave, who's up next, please?
It's Andrew.
What's up, Jack, dude? I have your luggage.
It'd be so great if you said that.
Right? It's right here.
He is wearing a vest and a tie.
So I just need a validation tag, please.
No problem, yeah.
My question is a little bit existential, I guess. What song do you think played the moment you were born, and what song would you like played at your funeral?
I have the songs I'd like to play at my funeral written down somewhere. I told somebody about it in the envelope, but I can't remember exactly all. But I can't tell you. It would be too personal to tell you. But the song that I was playing when I was born was probably a Roger Miller song, because my parents are big Roger Miller fans. And they love King of the Road and things like that. Kansas City Star. He was a big thing with my parents. It was probably Roger Miller.
Thank you, sir. Good question. Jack White is here. Breakfast With, by the way, we've got one more segment coming up. And how about another song before we go to break? What do you think? Yeah! Here's Jack.
This is a song I'm going to play now from our new record. It's called Temporary Ground.
Return on home with answers. A sad existence glue is now all in.
on our shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and bins. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Walk with me, Susie Lee, through the park, by the tree. We will rest upon the ground and look at all the books we found. Safely walk to school without a sound. Safely walk to school without a sound. School all by ourselves, bested on our uniforms from chasing all the ants and worms. We clean up and now it's time to learn. We clean up and now it's time to learn. Numbers. Numbers, letters, learn to spell. Nouns and books, show and tell. Time we were through the ball and back to class, through the hall. Teacher marks I hide against the wall. Teacher marks I hide against the wall. And we don't notice any time pass. We don't notice anything.
Breakfast with Jack White, world famous K-Rock.
Let's get ready for breakfast!
Kevin and Bean's Breakfast with Jack White, K-Rock.
We are back here on the Kevin and Bean Show in the Red Bull Sound Space. Breakfast with Jack White, ladies and gentlemen. Got time for one more segment with Jack. By the way, Jack, was there anything you wanted to talk about today that we haven't asked you about? Anything on your mind?
What have you been doing?
Just being excited about this. Just wait for this. We're so happy to. How do you like Nashville, by the way? I know you've been there a number of years now.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
grew up in Detroit, lived there your whole life, and then all of a sudden Nashville. Big change?
Yeah, it's wild. I loved it. I moved there and I didn't know anybody. And now there's a huge family of people there. And there's so many bands that are there now that are cooking. And it's, you know, there's the Etts and Kings of Leon and Black Keys. There's so many people who live in the town and that are totally different from the country world, because before when I got there, it was just country. That was great for me. It felt really comfortable for me.
Why did you go there?
Because it felt comfortable, so I could do what I needed to do in a town that was sort of maybe more focused toward the commercial side of country music. Sort of feel like I could just kind of do my own thing and not have to be bothered. I also don't feel that comfortable in big cities to work in, because I feel sort of claustrophobic. So it's just a right-sized town. And now it's just blossomed. The huge family that we have at Third Man Records just blossomed. So many people have moved there and that I know from Detroit and from London. And we started off with two people at Third Man Records. Now we have, I think, 30 people working.
Are you going to have to leave it behind again and move to someplace smaller?
Yep. Your house.
Speaking of Third Man, as a guy who was a recording artist for a long time before you started running your own record label, has that changed your opinion of how the business works?
Yeah, you can't help but be changed all the time about what's going on. If you involve yourself in actually the physical record making and the actual process of the presentation of it, You think about every single moment of it, you know, what picture is underneath the CD card, and what kind of logo's in the corner, and how it's actually made at the factory. All those things, you start to involve yourself in. It was really beautiful, because the whole product becomes a piece of art that's you and a group of people made together from scratch, and you're working in little components all the way up, instead of just sort of only doing music. I mean, some people like to do that, only sing or only write or only perform. And I think my brain's been mechanical from when I was younger, and about being in the mechanical process. So I get more out of that, I guess.
As a business, though, is it able to be profitable? Can you make a living running a record label in 2014?
Yeah, shockingly, it does. I mean, everything we do at Third Man, every single idea seems to be a bad idea. I don't know. It's just like, I mean, for making money, it seems like a bad idea, but it's something that we want to do, and it accidentally somehow works out. I think like what we just did with the new album, someone was holding up the Ultra LP. We put so much work and effort into that, and time and money into it, for something that really doesn't make it worth more money to us, or you know, we don't charge twice as much for it or anything like that. I guess it's just something we want to exist, and somehow it connects with people. I think if you do something that you are passionate about, other people will come to it and they'll want to share it instead of you going out and trying to sell it to them. If you're concentrating on making something beautiful, I think some people will just kind of wander over and see what's going on.
If you're talented, which you are.
Well, thank you. I don't know what to say.
I love that you're keeping the art in the music business, though. I mean, that's really great. You know what I mean? All right, we're almost out of time here. How about another song from Jack? Red Bull Sound Space. Breakfast with Jack White, the Kevin and Bean Show here on K-Rock.
A breakfast with Jack White. How great was this? How great was Jack to come
so
with
fun.
This morning?
The album is called Lazaretto. It is available everywhere. Everyone listening, you must. It's not a request. It's an order. You must immediately buy, download, whatever you have to do. Get yourself some Lazaretto. And Jack, you're going to be out on tour this summer. You're going to be playing America this time around. It's going to be fun. Great to see you.
Thank you very much.
And super fun.
I want to say thank you to everybody who came here today. It's really nice.
Thank you. All the best to you, my friend. Jack White, one more time.
I took a sweet little time about it. Sweet little time about it.